Hello, everybody. This is Dr. Diana Wiley, your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter. And I am thrilled because my friend and colleague, Dr. Linda DeVillers, is my guest once again. Linda is the author of Love Skills, a fun, upbeat guide to sexual relationships. Welcome back to the program, Linda. I'm so glad you're here.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
Well, you have a wonderful book in Love Skills, and we discussed it a couple of weeks ago. And you have another book that we probably won't touch on as much today, but it's Simple Sexy Food. And it's all about aphrodisiacs, 101 tasty aphrodisiac recipes and sensual tips to stir your libido and feed your love. And that was a real labor of love for you to do that book, because you tested all the recipes and everything, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. And
big job.
And who took all the wonderful photographs in the book?
A professional photographer in Santa Barbara who specializes in food photography.
Yep. I think it would take a specialty, wouldn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, and I was very honored because you asked me to write the foreword. And just I'll repeat what I said in the foreword, and then we're going to talk about your Love Skills book more, because this is how far back Linda and I go. It was the summer of 1991 when Linda DeVillers and I first met in Amsterdam at the World Congress of Sexology. We enjoyed the sessions, the field trips with colleagues, noticing at once we were women of appetites. Not at all afraid to feed our hunger. Since we both loved life and love and sensory adventures, we became friends. And, of course, there's more. But, yeah, you and I go back to how many years is that? 1991? That's it's a lot.
20. Pushing 25.
Yeah, good. Well, did you get the proposed outline that I sent you on email?
Actually, I did not.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll give it to you now, because based on what you said, mostly on your notes, except for the beginning, I thought we'd give, because you mentioned it in your book on page 151, Steinberg's theory of love. We'll start with that, because it's kind of a nice overview. And then we'll go into body image.
Right.
And
I cleared it up. I have it now.
Oh, I'm so glad. Maybe as we go, you can even just take a glance, because I put the page numbers in there.
See that.
Good. Steinberg's theory of love, you know, I was really glad you put that in your book, because I still have an article from Psychology Today, September 1986, because I do bibliotherapy. I give my clients articles to read, and I still give this one out. It's called The Three Faces of Love. So we've got imagine the triangle, and I'll just introduce it
Sure. This
way, and then please come right in, because you talk about how essential the passion part of the triangle is. So he says that equal portions of love's three components form a consummate or complete love. So imagine the triangle. So you have commitment, mm-hmm. and that's the cognitive component of love, and you know, that can last even when the passion has died down, the commitment.
Correct.
Right. And then the intimacy is the emotional component of love, and some people can bear their souls to each other but have little in the way of commitment or passion, so then that means it's sort of a high-grade friendship.
Yeah.
And passion, which is, and you point this out in your book too, the motivational component of love. And what do you say about passion and Sternberg's study?
Well, I think what we have to say, honestly, is in his theory, the ideal form of what he called consummate love was
right.
equal parts of all these three elements, and that the truth is they do wax and wane a bit over the course of a long-term relationship. And that what's really important for people is to make sure their little triangles are compatible.
Mm-hmm.
If one person really, really values passion and another person really values, say, the commitment, they may or may not make for a really good match. But I think he also makes the comment that although for many couples the passion element may indeed not be a full one-third throughout the course of a relationship, it's really important that an element of it remain throughout an entire relationship, no matter how long it has existed.
Because you point out, and he does too, that passion motivates us to be close to each other and want to communicate.
Exactly, exactly.
And, yeah, passion is the motivation. The commitment is the cognitive part
right.
of love. You decide to commit. And intimacy is the emotional component of love.
Right. And we do know. And so it means that the passion part, it's not only the motivator, but you have to be motivated to do things that will help keep it going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you've worked with many, many couples over the years, and so have I. And, of course, your book is filled with lots of tips for keeping that passion going, the fun, upbeat tips.
That's right.
Yeah, and I like it in your book because you have lots of quotes from lots of people of all ages.
That's true.
And, of course, you are also a professor. You're a teacher. I guess you're on summer break now?
I actually taught 3 days ago, or last weekend at Pepperdine.
Yeah.
Saturday, but I mostly don't teach in the summer, but I accepted a job this summer.
Yes, yes. And so it gives you a little break, though, not to be teaching, but your private practice carries on.
That's true.
Yep. And I have always known you to be fit and to have a really attractive body. So you can talk about body image and negative body image, and you talk about it in your book, and it seems very important to have a good body image. And of course, so many women have negative body image, and it does get in the way of their sexuality.
It does, and I think we even want to mention that women do not have a monopoly on it, that both men and women have body image issues, although, of course, women do seem to have it to an even greater extent. And I think we have a problem in the culture right now that
mm-hmm.
we do know we have a little bit of a lifestyle issue going on with more and more people not eating well and not exercising, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
there are various tricks to enhancing it. And, of course, no matter what one looks like, you have to start focusing on the things you actually like on your body. And, you know,
that is so important, and so many women don't do that. They
right.
just, they'll say, you know, they put their life on hold until I lose the 10 pounds or until I lose the 20 pounds, and I'm not going to be sexual, I'm not going to do this. And so how, in a little more specifically, how does a woman's image of her body affect her sexuality and her relationship with her partner?
Oh, golly. When it's negative, I mean,
mm-hmm.
what you just said is exactly true. And I've had clients really quite recently also. I cannot allow my husband to see my body at all.
Right, and then they make love in the dark.
And this client does do that. We've worked our way up to subdued light and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And at least in her case, she's now having sex with her husband. But other women are going to say, I can't have sexual connection at all.
Mm-hmm.
We can't go out. I think it can cause depression.
Oh, I agree. It can cause a depression.
You don't want to go out.
Yeah, and it also keeps, because women more than men have. You pointed out that men do too, but it's women. We're so affected by the media and everything.
That's right.
You know, I think back to when I was in my 20s and I was less confident, and a lover might compliment me on my body, and I think to myself, oh, but doesn't he see my thighs?
Exactly.
And at that time, I wasn't able to see my body as it was, as another might see it, a unique shape embodying my individuality.
Right.
And I believe I had to change my body before I could love it. And, well, fortunately, I made some progress in that area.
Yes, indeed you did. Well, I think, you know, one of the classic exercises for anybody to do, and it's a little intimidating, we acknowledge that, but it's you stand both clothed and nude,
mm-hmm,
in the mirror from head to toe.
Mm-hmm.
You must discuss, I mean, with yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You clearly look at all the parts of your body, and the little zinger is, I say when I'm assigning this, I want you to make a list of what you like and dislike about your body.
Yes.
And your list of likes must exceed your list of dislikes.
And that's very challenging for some women.
And then you have to say, you have to remind people, do you have a clear complexion?
Mm-hmm.
What are your eyebrows like? You know, there's some of these littler parts of the body that actually are very important.
Mm-hmm.
A lot
mm-hmm.
of women just dismiss, well, you know, it's only my breast size that counts. Well,
right.
No, it's a lot of other parts of the body.
Mm-hmm.
And,
mm-hmm.
There has to be a sense of, you know, charity and generosity toward one's own body. If one has a partner, it's
mm-hmm.
so very useful to ask a partner, what do you like about my body?
And that takes courage, but it's very productive, typically.
It's productive, and my experience is that no matter what one's body looks like, women are surprised to hear their partners say what they say about what they like. It's not the part they thought, the very part that they were self, like you mentioned, thighs.
Mm-hmm.
It's very possible that their partner loves the voluptuous, well-endowed thighs, for example.
Uh-huh.
Yep. Or loves the little belly, loves small breasts because they can actually hold them.
That's right.
Things. I've heard men say, you know, if there's too much, it's all a waste.
And then you have other men that just love to be enveloped in large breasts.
Yes, of course.
So there's a lot of men are just so happy to have their partner naked and showing up and being present.
Right.
And loving them back, that women are so critical. And I read something some years ago that most men want their partners to be heavier than their partners think they want,
at least five
pounds heavier.
That's definitely still true.
Yeah, yeah. So women, they look at the airbrushed models in the magazines, and they get all these ideas what to do about a poor body image. I like your exercise with a mirror and listing your parts and asking your partner what he likes about your body. I think it can also be important to cultivate the ability to appreciate your uniqueness as a woman.
Absolutely.
And when you start to appreciate your imperfections as well, endearing distinctions, then it's kind of a reframe, but you will have begun to love yourself in a way that allows you to love others. Because really, isn't this true, Linda? In order to love another, it's important to respect his choice of you as a worthy lover.
And, you know, I'll give a very specific personal example.
Mm-hmm.
I happen to have a hammer toe.
Yeah.
And both my first husband and my current partner,
mm-hmm,
gets cute. And if my foot is in, you know, the hands of my current lover, he'll kind of play with it, and he'll pretend he's going to rip it off and do all sorts of things. But it's an object of intrigue and not revulsion.
Right, and that's your imperfection, and I know you're a skilled tennis player.
Yeah,
I bet that hammer toe has not bothered you in terms of your skills at tennis.
Yeah, functionally, and you know, that's so much what the research shows. We need to tell you what our body does for us. No, that's the foot that shoes never hurt in, and it's my intact foot that in some occasions, my foot's a little uncomfortable. I think it's a little bit longer, whatever.
Right.
No.
Yeah. When we talk about body image, I sometimes call, when women have a negative body image, I sometimes call it self-image neurosis.
Oh, I like that term.
Because it's often a way, thank you, it's often a way to avoid being sexual, as somehow an excuse not to abandon yourself to another.
Right.
So then the woman just becomes fixated on the girth of her thighs or the tilt of her breasts or the width of her hips.
And, you know, I'm going to bring up something else about that.
Yeah.
When the woman is obsessed like that, she is helping to objectify herself.
Yes.
Woman is passive object when, if we are talking in heterosexual terms, and for that matter, I'm sure it applies to lesbian women as well.
Uh-huh.
What's a turn-on to most partners is, I love being around a partner who is turned on. And who knows how to
turn
herself. So that's the turn on, not what little parts look like.
Exactly. It wasn't a big survey, but a survey of some 500 men. The top of the list was what was appealing about a lover was her enthusiasm.
Yes, I completely believe that. That's really exactly what I'm saying.
And that she could let go and be uninhibited. And frankly, that may come more easily with age. As a woman feels, I know it certainly did for me, as a woman feels more comfortable in her skin, she's more assertive, she's better able to say what she wants and needs.
That's right.
And she's, because negative body image is often tied into low self-esteem.
That is true.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the classic study that was done, exactly 20 years ago, but it's the one that still is widely quoted, and it's still in my lecture notes for one very specific reason related to what you're saying,
mm-hmm.
had to do with what are the difficulties that women in their 20s have.
Mm-hmm.
Then the data zoomed in on women in their 50s. Women in their 50s, and I point out, well, if they were in their 50s, at least half of them were menopausal.
Sure.
They had fewer sexual problems than the women 18 to 29. They were more comfortable. They had less pain, which is very interesting.
Less
during sexual activity. And yes, overall, they were more confident, and it's clearly because they were more comfortable in their bodies, in their minds.
Gail Sheehy talked about that crossover that occurs somewhere after 50 for many couples, and it can have very positive effects for the bedroom. And what she says is that men become more romantic and women become more assertive.
Yes.
So men slow down and take their time, and you know, and their feminine side, their anima, becomes a little more prominent, and they can be more sensitive, and and they don't just go for penetration right off.
That's right.
And the woman's masculine side, the animus, becomes a little more prominent, and she can say what she wants, what she needs, so that can have a real positive impact in the bedroom.
Definitely. Definitely.
Yeah. So, I like, your book is very practical because you have, for instance, on page 93, body love self-image exercise, and I like how you open it. recent research shows that while many of us give our looks a low rating, we are perceived as far more attractive by our lovers. Well, we've already
talked
a little bit about that. But you have other really good exercises throughout, and if people do them, it can impact their body, their negative body image, yeah?
Yes, and I want to mention a couple of those specific exercises.
Yeah, please do.
And comments about them.
Mm-hmm.
One of them, and when people read reviews of my book, or when they do reviews, say, having read it, certain exercises either are love or hate exercises, and others that most people kind of like. But one of the love or hate ones does have to do with looking around and finding photographs or whatever of images of women that are your body type.
Oh, that's such a good one. On 94, I'm seeing
exactly that. That you admire, that you find attractive, and that you're a little bit more able to say, you know, my body's kind of like Oprah's, and Oprah's pretty cool, or whatever it is. And, of course, some people go, no, I don't want to get pictures of other people, and that's fine. But, you know, the idea is to give people a variety of choices of ways to improve their body image, and some will resonate, some won't. But that has proved to be quite successful for some people.
Yep. And so you have this.
And another one
to
do with, which is unusual, I tweaked this exercise from a Jungian psychologist, well known for his journaling workshops.
Yes. Oh, your dialogue with your body.
With body.
Mm-hmm.
Either dialogue with your entire body or with a body part. It involves literally writing a script. You know, me saying, body, why do you have to be so decrepit and blah, blah, blah? And body then answering. It's kind of insulting. And what's very fascinating is that it can sound as if it's a, you know, a bit of a stilted exercise, and yet most people who do actually do it talk about how the dialogue sort of takes off on its own. It's really a fascinating device.
Yes, and it takes off on its own, but they got to write it down.
Yes, you do have to write it.
Yeah.
For example, the person that really, the one that's in my book was written by a former graduate assistant, and she dialogued with her small breasts.
I'm looking at it right now. It's wonderful.
And I want you to know that it's an entirely authentic dialogue, and originally I'd written one. I tried to make it unisex, and I wrote one with a nose. And then she offered, and this one is so much better, and she comes up with all of the assets in her particular circumstance for being exactly the way she is.
Exactly. Good, and it is sort of amusing. In the middle of it, she has her breasts answering, honestly, how many times have you been mistaken for a boy?
Exactly.
And then she answers, I guess the real issue is that I think that bigger breasts would be so much sexier. Most men do not get excited looking at flat-chested women in bikinis. I'm tired of looking like a prepubescent schoolgirl. Breasts, I see. So you're trying to attract the kind of men who watch Baywatch.
Right.
And it goes on. This woman also had a sense of humor, didn't she?
Oh, she was sharp as anything. She was half Vietnamese, half American. And she was very attractive. I mean, it was like, please, you have lots of assets. And she was born. Well, she'd not only had boyfriends, but she was not aware of any boyfriend who had ever said, I wish, you know, better.
Yeah.
Not at all.
Well, that's right. And, all of these exercises are important. I've encouraged my clients with body image issues to do some of them, too. You also talk about exercising together, and this can often help with body image, because if we start to feel a little more energetic and fit, And it's use it or lose it. You know, I know that for sure. That's why I've been a swimmer for 30 years.
Oh, wow, that's impressive.
Yeah, actually more than 30 years. I'm dating myself, but it doesn't matter. I'm comfortable with it. But, exercising together and doing things that are fun. And you have in your book, this is such a good book, Love Skills, listeners, on page 71, guidelines for boosting your love life through exercise. And you say, make time and select an activity you like. And elaborate on some of these.
Well,
by the way, I should tell our listeners, you were one of the first. I mean, we're going back maybe 25 years to report. You did research on the value of exercise and sexual arousal.
I did. I did the first national survey. It was carried in Shape magazine.
Yes.
And yes, it was it was groundbreaking because it covered both the immediate effects of exercise as well as the long-term effects. And by effects, I mean sexual effects.
Uh-huh.
And so it did indeed support the fact that women who exercise have higher sex drive. They're more likely to be orgasmic,
mm-hmm.
and more readily aroused. And of the three, it was the sex drive in the first place, which tends to be the issue today, that
mm-hmm.
was most affected. And I talk to clients and people about what's referred to as the sexual second wind. So
yes.
In terms of those immediate effects, when you exercise, I think most people kind of are aware of this, you do have endorphins that increase, and if you're literally jogging or doing something quite active, they may really come on in a great rush.
Mm-hmm.
You have all these positive hormone and neurotransmitter effects that put you in a better mood and, here's the key, and
mm-hmm.
relax you.
Mm-hmm.
And boost mood.
So, boost the mood. Well, you mentioned that some of these folks are depressed, and we know that depression is often kept at bay with regular, vigorous exercise.
That's correct. And so I've even known times when people, whether it had to do with interests or actual functional issues, I will sometimes tell people, you know what, why don't you go play a game of tennis, or why don't you walk around the block, or, you know, take a little hike and come home. And there's about a 90-minute window when these changes are activated.
90-minute window.
Mm-hmm. And I have known people who said, yes, this really did work out well.
And now, does that window allow for a shower if they don't want
to
make love to a sweaty partner?
On how far you went to go exercise.
Yeah.
If you walked around the block, you got plenty of time to take a shower when you get
there.
If you took a hike in the woods and had to drive home for 45 minutes, maybe you've got a little different
yeah.
But, even that brings up the whole intriguing issue of, who said a little sweatiness was such a terrible thing? I mean, that's a very personal thing.
It's very personal. But some people are turned on by a little smell of sweat.
But, you know, I think you can take a quick shower and not a,
Or even better, take a quick shower together.
Exactly. And just turn it into a good time. And I think that part of making sure that what you do, you enjoy, and that you don't do it because I have to go to this. And one of the things, I think I'm mentioning this because several people I know now, even in my circle of friends, are big dancers.
Yes, and we have to go to a break in about a minute, but let's talk about that because dancing is wonderful exercise, and it gets people in rhythm together, and so talk about that for about a minute, and then if we run out, we'll resume the conversation after the break.
Most of us think, well, dancing is fun and it's sexy because,
mm-hmm.
I mean, a lot of people have an imagery of dancing as kind of got a sexual element, but I think a lot of us forget it is real exercise.
Yeah, yeah.
And, hey, you're allowed to exercise and have fun at the same time.
Well, can, then it's exercise that you really like.
Yeah, it's like a byproduct of something you enjoy.
Yes, you have to find something you like or it won't stick.
That's right. And why do I play tennis? Because I really like tennis.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah. I imagine you do. And you're good at it from what I hear.
I'm in a league.
Oh, wow. All right, Linda, we're going to go to the break. And when we come back, we'll talk maybe a little more about dancing, or we'll go to dressing up, shopping together, and play, and all of the ways that play, sexual play, can be enhanced. I'm so glad you're my guest again, Linda. Thank you.
Thank you.
So stay with us, and we'll be right back after the break. Yeah, sex is really good. And I always say at this stage in my life that it's my particular fountain of youth, too. I'm very grateful. Lots of blessings. So, dressing up.
Well, dressing up, obviously people enjoy having, I think, nice clothes. Or some people say, no, I'm not really into that. But here again, I think it's a great idea to go off with a partner, if you have one, and shop together.
Yes.
And find things that each of you likes and thinks is sexy on the other person.
And that can include going to a sex store, like we have one in the area, it's probably national, called Lovers.
Oh, okay.
And just going together and picking out some sexy lingerie. You know, I've said for years, we dress for success, we should also dress for sex. And most men really, really love it. They're visual, they like to see their woman dressed up in high heels and garter belt and stockings and just sexy lingerie. And it can inform fantasies.
That's well put. Yes, I do.
Oh, thank you. I practice what I preach, I'm glad to say.
Well, and I do know, I know of actually a particular colleague that we both know who will remain anonymous, but her comment has been, well, I'm not that into the sexy lingerie, but I love heels. And I wear heels around the house even because they just make me feel sexy. And that's the point, too, that you want to wear the kind of stuff that makes you personally feel sexy.
Yeah, well, heels make me feel sexy, but I can't wear them for too long.
Well, I don't happen to share that person's view. I'd rather have the sexy lingerie on. And also, I do encourage a broader, you know, band of women to become more aware of certain things that are both comfortable and sexy. So I'm a huge, you know, promoter of what most people, I believe, call a sarong.
Let's talk about that.
Call it a wraparound. I was introduced to, in the French word, pareo.
Pareo, right.
When I was in the Caribbean, it was the Virgin Islands, and it was apparently quite common.
Mm-hmm.
These were original Balinese, you know, design. They were, in, you know, and relative, a little bit more expensive. And almost from the moment I purchased one, it's like, you know what, this really works for me. I kind of don't like having straps on all the time on my shoulders.
Uh-huh, yes.
You know, I think what's so interesting about sarongs is they're so suggestive. You know,
yes,
actually quite covered. I'm thinking in terms of you have it tied above your breasts.
Right.
Everything's covered, but they're flowy and they're vividly colored, or if you really like them a little tamer, there's more subdued colors. And you can flick them off with one flick of the finger.
Well, I was just going to say, they're really easy to remove, and you can maybe even do a little dance as you remove your pareo, your sarong.
And if you're in the right mood, you can have it tied around your waist.
Uh-huh.
Instead of around your breast. I mean, you know, there's a million ways to tie them, actually.
And I think they often come. I remember getting one at one of my milestone birthdays and using it and enjoying it. But it came with instructions with all the different ways you could tie it.
Exactly. And I was, after that experience in the Caribbean, I found myself about a decade later in Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
On the island of, the Big Island, actually.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they were selling silk ones. So I probably own 15 of these.
Wow.
To 20.
I think you do like them. That's impressive.
But wherever I go, I land up with a new sarong because they are in a lot of countries.
Yeah. Well, that's great, and I bet your partner enjoys them too.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Oh, that's wonderful.
And you can, you know, again, when I related to my other book, if we were to talk food as foreplay.
Yes.
You know, a sarong like this is a wonderful thing to be wearing either while you're cooking or eating dinner. And again, you can certainly segue into new activities. Very
right. Cool. Maybe a part of that segue is that you're feeding each other some of the aphrodisiac foods that are in your great book, Simple Sexy Food.
Right. And so I've just always gravitated to them, and as I said, they fit every body type. I think it's hard to envision a woman who would not look feminine and alluring in a sarong.
I agree with you, and even a heavier woman.
Yes.
And she doesn't have to worry about the size of it.
Exactly. Exactly.
And you say in your book how it makes the wearer feel. And you quote Lillian, who's 54, "When I wear sexy underwear, I feel very sexy. It's funny because no one knows that I'm wearing them. But as long as I do, it makes me feel good about how I look."
I think that's so true, and I think a lot of women will confess that that's true.
Yeah. I sometimes am rather bold, and I will wear a dress, and I did this recently, where I don't have any underwear on. I guess it's called going commando. And
another interesting possibility.
And my fiancé loves it because he knows what's underneath. And it's sort of tempting.
Right.
And provocative and seductive even.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
We could even add,
aren't we naughty? Here we are.
Well, we're
older women and we're naughty, and it just is so much fun.
Right. And it's healthy. I mean, do you realize when you go, I'd like another word instead of commando.
I know, yeah.
No, I've never maybe even heard that. But going buff.
Going buff, yes.
It helps protect women against yeast infections.
I know, because she can breathe.
Exactly, exactly.
And it can feel rather, stimulating if, say, some air comes up.
That's true.
Between her legs.
Yes, right.
And I like what you say in your book. You're quoting a male. He says, "It definitely adds excitement when I know my lover is wearing something underneath that is sexy. It's like opening a present." He's rather poetic, isn't he?
Right.
So talk a little bit more about going shopping together, because maybe we just glossed over that, because I think that can be really fun. Let's pick out some things.
Well, I think, although you're right, that sex stores sometimes do have really sexy clothing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one avenue to take, but I also going to a little bit more conventional store.
Mm-hmm.
It's Victoria's Secret, or, I mean, landing up in Nordstrom's or something like that. It's important that one feels sexy even when you're headed to the movies, you know? Instead of just let me throw on my sweats, why not put a little bit of effort into, I want to feel nice when I'm headed to the movies with my partner.
I've lived now in Seattle for the end of August. It'll be 6 years. I can hardly believe it. But I've always liked to dress up, you know, not just sexy dressing up, but I like to dress up.
Yes.
So it was a little bit of an adjustment because Seattle tends to be a very casual city. But I don't care. I dress up anyway because I think I like it. My fiancé likes it.
Right.
You know, it's and then I feel more feminine and more sexy.
I'm going to bring up something because this past weekend is Wimbledon is happening.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not fanatical about it, but sure enough, I was watching a little bit
of course, yes.
This weekend. And they were interviewing Maria Sharapova.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and a good-looking woman she is.
Yes.
And so there was a question. She started her own business. I confess I'm not totally excited to know that instead of starting a clothing business, which is what I think she should have done, she's selling candy.
Really?
Yeah. So here's the point, though. Somebody says something about clothing, the interviewer, and she said, well, yes, I do like clothes, too, and I always have liked being my own person.
Mm.
For example, one time there was a black tie event,
mm-hmm.
and I decided to wear a red dress.
Mm-hmm.
And she was really highlighting, I do what I want to do in clothes and what makes me feel good.
She's very statuesque. She's got to look great in a red dress.
Well, I think the point was, which is what you said, she didn't let...
Oh, the conventional stuff.
She did by the rules of mm-hmm. dress, you know? She did something she felt like doing, and I'm sure it was in good taste and et cetera.
Yeah. Well, good for her. Speaking of Wimbledon, I heard something on the news that the all-white tradition is being threatened a little bit. They can have a few centimeters of color.
Oh, yes. I think, well...
And I think one of the athletes, one of the women, was wearing coral underwear, so that was how she expressed herself.
Yes, sooner or later they will cave because none of the other major tournaments keep that restriction.
Yeah, it's very traditional. All right, Linda, so we need to move on because before we know it, we'll
be out of time.
Be out of time. So I like how you talk about the erotic accessory kit.
That's just a fun term I developed for saying, you know, some people would say the drawer of sex toys. But you could literally have instead of having it in a drawer, you could create a nice little box
mm-hmm.
that you could take with you on a weekend or have it at home or
mm-hmm.
it from the bedroom to the living room, et cetera. And your accessory kit has those personal things in it that you enjoy using when you're involved in sexual activity. I mean, you could have oils or lotions. This is where you could have lubricants, condoms if you're using condoms.
Feathers, erotic literature. You mentioned these too. And
You'll notice that I also have listed even some foods. I don't know how many foods, but there are certain jars of food you can purchase that can be, you know, they can hold for a long time and be
sure.
used.
Yeah, you mentioned whipped cream and chocolate sauce and honey and champagne, all those good things.
And I'm going to name something else that I see I didn't include, but it's something
mm-hmm.
I've personally had a lot of fun with. And it would be whether you have makeup or something, some form of body paint. And body painting, I think, is kind of cool, even for people like me who aren't really great drawers.
And where do you get this body paint? Because it's different than regular paint.
I think you can find them at some sex stores.
Yeah.
And the wonderful ones I got once were at a costume store.
Yes.
A little bit more about maybe Halloween type of store. And they were like crayons. You can actually, you could go to Rite Aid. You could go to any CVS and buy washable crayons for kids. And you'd be surprised what you do with those lovely little washable crayons.
That's a good idea.
I confess more than one man has drawn beautiful designs on my breasts.
Wow.
Wash them.
Great. So he got to express his creative talent on a lovely, lovely palette.
I would say so. And again, it's something that may appeal to some people, not all people, but I think that could be in your little erotic accessory kit also.
Well, that sort of thing leads into more sexual play.
Yeah.
And that's what we want because, you know, play, be silly, don't take yourself so damn seriously. Laugh, make him or her laugh, and because laughter really makes everything else easier.
Yes, that's true.
And, you know, well, you remember Steve Allen, and then there's Steve Allen Jr. Do you remember?
Oh, yes, I remember Steve Allen Jr.
Because he's shown up at some of our conferences.
Correct.
And he's a physician who's also a sex educator. Remember he taught people how to juggle with his rainbow scarves?
Yes.
And he pointed out how it gets you into a different place of your brain, and so he'd take a break from his medical practice and go out on his porch and juggle.
Yeah, you remember that now.
Yeah. And he says, you know, we've got this happy, giggling 3-year-old inside of us. Well, many people do. So letting out this playful child can absolutely rejuvenate our relationships. And so because, again, humor has a detoxifying and diffusing ability to help keep relationships intact. I mean, if you can laugh together, it's pretty amazing.
Oh, and it's literally healing. You know, there's a whole body of research that's even talked about its role in recovery from major illnesses.
That's right. There's a lot, and now there are laughter clubs,
yeah, conferences,
and but springing up, and laughter yoga, and all of that. And Steve Allen Jr. pointed out that silly did not originally mean a ridiculous or trivial, because it comes from the old English seleg, which originally meant blessed, prosperous, happy, and healthy.
Oh.
And he says, that's what my work is all about.
Uh-huh.
So silliness is a way to feel all four things. All four things. Blessed, prosperous, happy, and healthy. But think about it. When you can be really silly and laughing with your lover,
right,
you have to be very vulnerable and open.
And non-judgmental.
Yes. And non-judgmental, exactly.
Right.
Yeah. And so, but all of this, of course, the laughter, it boosts the immune system because it raises endorphins.
Right.
And and I think it turns out that the receptors for endorphins in the brain are also found in white blood cells.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I remember that Steve Allen Jr. pointed out that in the Zuni Indian culture, clowns are considered healers.
Right.
Right along with the medicine men and women, because if you came down with an illness, no matter what, then you could choose to be treated by a clown if you wanted.
That's an interesting idea.
Yeah, I know. It is.
I want to bring in one thing or get your read on it.
Yeah, no, please.
The only time, and maybe it's not the same as laughing together, or there's one kind of laughter that instead of bonding is an anxiety response. And I'm talking about when lovers are together and one starts touching the other, and the receiver suddenly goes into that's ticklish or don't do that.
And they giggle.
Well, yes. I think we need to make that distinction between something that we would call positive, playful, silly, and avoidance, silly.
I think that's a very good distinction to make. And, have you found a connection between, say, a person, male or female, being very ticklish about having a foot touched, and maybe, and giggling, and you know, just not being able to tolerate it, with maybe not having enough arousal?
I'm not sure I've seen it related that much to not having enough arousal, and I don't think the foot would really be that problematic.
Mm-hmm.
The people that I know who've had problems with this, one man would not allow his wife to touch his back.
Hmm.
Because, you know, I mean, and if they were in, say, a missionary position,
mm-hmm.
touching his back, he would laugh or say, "Stop that, it tickles me."
Mm-hmm.
And or on the sides of the body, especially the core, you know, the core part of the body. Those are the ones I've known of where it was more problematic. Because I think with feet, I think a fair number of people are ticklish, even though there are ways of maybe learning to not be. My sense is that would not cause as much of a barrier as some of these parts right in the center
mm-hmm.
are. And it's usually been a matter of having to teach people to deep breathe.
Deep breathe, yes.
Breathe and let your partner try that again and see if you can breathe through this sense of ticklishness.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's very helpful, because if a couple can laugh together and get through this and breathe,
right,
it's really a good laugh, like a good cry or good, really good sex. It's a natural tranquilizer.
Yes, correct.
And it's also a natural stress buster.
And I think the other point is most laughter is not about tickling, you know. It's just,
no, it isn't. Other. No. No. But it is about letting one's guard down and being silly and vulnerable and just laughing and kind of poking fun at each other. But you have to have a good amount of confidence to do that.
Right.
And trust in your partner. I think most women, I want to get your take on this, of course, Linda.
Yeah?
Most women have much better sex when they feel safe.
Oh, of course, yes.
And the same thing with silliness or laughing, being vulnerable. You have to feel safe to be able to do that. And going back, circling back to how we opened this program with Sternberg's theory of love, that you need to have, I'm going to let that go. I should have turned it off. That you've got to have the commitment to feel that kind of safety within a relationship.
And, you know, the last thing I'd say about positive,
mm-hmm.
positive play, positive laughter, is that it needs to be coming from a place of mutual vulnerability and not with one person one up.
Mm-hmm.
Occasionally there are people who I'm going to make you laugh so that I can control you.
Oh, such a good point. Wow. I didn't think about that, but of course that's true.
Right. So it has to be on both sides. We're going to have fun together.
Yes. I just made a note of that because I hadn't really thought of about that. There are lots of people that, you know, aren't in the best relationship, healthy relationship mode, who do want to control the other person.
Right.
And it's a more
devious, or it's a more subtle way of doing it. We don't usually
mm-hmm.
doing it through laughter, but some people do.
Some people do.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, most people will say that they want somebody, like if they're doing online dating.
Yes.
They'll often list at the top of the list, I want somebody with a sense of humor.
And then, as you probably know, the research also shows
mm-hmm.
that what is your definition of a sense of humor?
Mm-hmm.
Old classic way, if a woman has a good sense of humor, it means she laughs at a guy's jokes. And if it's a guy with a good sense of humor, he can make you laugh. And notice where the power play is there.
Yeah, that's right.
Yes, exactly. Okay, so we have to move beyond that and say women, too, have permission to help people laugh. It should go both directions.
Mm-hmm.
And in closing, I had a client who's brilliant and one of my favorite clients, but she was also a comedian.
Mm-hmm.
The first 6 months of therapy, she would make these witty comments that would indeed make me laugh.
Right.
And it became a part of the therapy, that it was her way of distancing herself from the issues at hand. And she came to acknowledge this, and we reached a point in therapy, and she even said, I just have this inordinate need to make people laugh, and I have to learn the right time and place to do that.
What a brilliant insight that you facilitated her to get.
Yeah.
And that's wonderful.
Really interesting.
And PRN likes me to stop, you know, a few minutes before the top of the hour, so we will stop.
All right.
Thank you so much, Linda. And I will tell people, as I did last time you were on, that to get your book, Love Skills, they can go to loveskills.com, right? That's easiest way.
That's the best way, yeah.
That's the best way. What about your book, Simple Sexy Food?
Simple Sexy Food is also on Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
On a signed copy, you should go to simplesexyfood.com. But either way, you can get it.
Yeah, and it's such a good book, and I've tried so many recipes in it, and they're all really delicious and sexy. So, Linda, thank you. We'll do this again, and I appreciate your time and all that you've offered on this program. Thank you again.
Thank you.
Bye-bye, everybody. I'll be back next week, same time, same place.